I want to make a few points, but I guess the first thing I would say is I just think the idea that Barack Obama is making the fact that his father was a Muslim a major selling point of his campaign is absurd. And the idea that we should that someone's vision that somehow Muslims would want to assassinate Barack Obama because he had gone to a madrasa and no longer did is even more absurd. And any candidate or their surrogates who would raise that as an issue, it seems to me, is not only absurd but absolutely reprehensible. So I just wanted to say that. I hope this is not the beginning of a kind of a mantra we're going to start hearing about the degree to which we should be concerned. I mean, first of all, it seems to me we should take it as a given that al-Qaeda would presumably be very happy to assassinate any American president who was elected in 2009. And as for the idea that this somehow is a widespread view amongst Muslims as a whole, I don't know where someone would have gotten that impression. So let me make 8 points about the intersection of the Middle East and the 2008 election. The first is that the Middle East is not as dominant an issue in the presidential election as I think many people thought it would be a year or 6 months ago. That there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all is the at least perceived success of the surge. Has made it less of an issue amongst voters in both parties, I think particularly in the Republican Party. I think had the surge been agreed to be a disaster, there would have been a real possibility that one front mainstream Republican candidate, maybe a Romney, might have taken a flyer on verging away from the Bush position on Iraq. If you talk to Republican strategists back over the summer, there was a lot of thought, not amongst McCain, but say among someone like Romney. In fact, Brownback, although no one really remembers him anymore, actually did oppose the surge. The Republicans do need to represent change. And so there would have been a possibility, I think, that a major Republican, not just Ron Paul, would have opposed the surge. That would have produced a big Iraq debate inside the Republican Party. We haven't seen that. They're all indistinguishable, except for Ron Paul, and of course they all delight in beating up on Ron Paul, saying that Ron Paul is not truly a conservative. I would say that were Calvin Coolidge alive today, he would agree with absolutely everything that Ron Paul is saying, but he may not have as big a constituency in the Republican Party as he once did. You cannot understand the rise of Mike Huckabee, who is the candidate, as Mike was mentioning, with the least experience on national security, without seeing that it has become less of a national security election than people thought. There was a lot of talk last summer that evangelical Christians were less focused on domestic issues like gay marriage and abortion and were shifting their focus to foreign policy, that the war on terror had become a values issue for Christian conservatives. And that's why they were going for Giuliani. Well, that argument looks significantly less persuasive today, with them going for Huckabee and Giuliani really seeming to fade and not even competing in states with big evangelical turnouts like Iowa. Secondly, Iran, which I think at a certain point people thought might be foreign policy issue 1A after Iraq, has significantly faded because of the result, because of the NIE. I think it's all Giuliani in particular seemed really gearing up to make Iran a very big part of his campaign. It's significantly less part of the campaign in both parties. This is not to say that Iraq still remains a very important issue. I would say right now you would have to say in the Democratic Party there are three main issues about equally significant: Iraq, healthcare, and the economy. In the Republican Party, you would say it's immigration and Iraq, and then terrorism, slightly more amorphous. But many would have thought, including probably me, 6 or 9 months ago, that Iraq might be clearly the number one issue in both parties, and certainly amongst Democrats. That's not really the case. The second point I wanted to make is that the Middle East, I think, is a slightly bigger issue amongst Republicans than amongst Democrats. Democrats are just more comfortable at this particular moment talking about domestic issues and concerns than Republicans are. I think you saw that in the debate last night. Democrats like talking about health care. Most Republicans don't really like talking about health care. They're more comfortable talking about the economy at this moment. And polls show that Democratic voters are more concerned about health care and the economy. Republican voters seem to be expressing their anxieties about globalization through the issue of immigration. This also has to do with, I think, a more fundamental difference in the way Democrats and Republicans look at foreign policy. For Republicans, certainly for McCain and Giuliani, maybe slightly less so for Romney, the war on terror really is American foreign policy. I mean, the war on, if you look at Giuliani's Foreign Affairs article, it virtually said nothing about American foreign policy other than the war on terror. It was as if that's all you need to know. That's partly because Republicans define the war on terror quite broadly, to include not just groups like al-Qaeda, but also, of course, Iran, Syria, groups like Hamas. They have a very broad definition of the war on terror, and that virtually encompasses all of American foreign policy. With the exception of Romney, they talk very little about international economics, which, if you remember, was a very, very important part of the way the Clinton administration saw American foreign policy. Think about how important Robert Rubin was in the making of Clinton foreign policy versus how important Republican Bush's secretaries of the Treasury have been in Bush foreign policy. Democrats define terrorism, jihadist terrorism, by and large, I think, more narrowly, which is, I think, they see it fundamentally as a non-state force, which is targeted in the United States, and therefore they're more willing to make a distinction between a state actor like Iran and the kind of al-Qaeda network. And I think Democrats are also just significantly more concerned about a series of issues which fall outside the war on terror, and to some degree even fall outside the rubric of national security altogether. Think about global warming, which is a much, much bigger concern for Democrats than it is for Republicans. Or again, questions about the impact of globalization on American jobs, trade issues, for instance, come up much, much more amongst Democrats. It reminds me, it's a little bit like, I think, the situation in the 1970s. In the 1970s, for Republicans, foreign policy still, conservatives, foreign policy was still the Cold War, basically a vision of a unified communist threat. For Democrats by the 1970s, that vision was really receding. There was much more concern about North-South issues amongst liberals in the 1970s, about the environment, a recognition that, in fact, communism was not a unified force, but there were fundamental differences, of course, between the Chinese and the Soviets. That's a little bit more, I think, that parallel, I think, helps to understand the way in which Democrats and Republicans see the war on terror differently in its relationship, how much of American foreign policy it actually constitutes. The third point I'd like to make is that there is enormous amount of agreement within both parties. There have been past presidential primaries where the differences within the parties were really quite profound. I mean, you think about Scoop Jackson versus, you know, Mo Udall and Fred Harris in 1976, or in 1976, Gerald Ford versus Ronald Reagan. Even 1988, Al Gore versus Jesse Jackson, or Bat Buchanan versus Bob Dole in 1996. Today, you have the dominant reality is enormous agreement amongst the Democrats and enormous agreement amongst the Republicans. And I think that's, by and large, sincere. I think Republicans genuinely believe that the surge has been an enormous success. I think Democrats, there are exceptions, of course, but I think by and large, if you put Democrats to a lie detector test, Democratic foreign policymakers and Democratic voters, they believe that we are not building a state in Iraq. That what we are building is a series of at least temporarily pro-American Sunni militias, fundamentally hostile to the Shia government, which the Shia government is hostile to. The Shia government has very little interest in us building up. That if a state is an entity that has a monopoly on legitimate violence, we may be even moving further away from that as we create our own pro-American Sunni militias there. And that there is right now something of a ceasefire between some of these militias, but it's very unlikely that that's going to hold up over the long term, particularly as America withdraws troops, which I think virtually everyone recognizes it's going to have to withdraw some troops. Democrats are unified in their opposition to military bases in Iraq, for instance. And I think Republicans, by and large, believe that we will have a military presence in Iraq, as John McCain says, for decades and decades along the model of Korea or Germany or former Yugoslavia. The fourth point I wanted to make is that it's interesting in the context of the 2008 elections to realize that George W. Bush is not where he was. In some ways, George W. Bush is now to the left of the Republican candidate. He's clearly to the left of the Republican candidates on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, at least going by his rhetoric of recent days, and Condoleezza Rice is. In some ways, you could argue that rhetorically, he's actually closer to the Democrats, that Republicans now face the interesting possibility of trying to run to Bush's right, certainly on that issue. On Iran, it's possible, it seems to me, over the course of 2008 that Bush could move into the Bush administration could move to greater negotiations with Iran that Republicans might be critical of. And if Bush goes down to 100,000 troops by the end of the year on Iraq, which he could, he might also be to the left of Republicans. So it seems to me that one of the interesting dynamics is that Republicans may have an opportunity to try. Republicans have to argue in 2008 that they represent change. There's simply no question that Americans don't want a third Bush term. It may be that, but of course, they don't want to violate certain conservative ideological orthodoxies that are important for their base. And I think they will look for opportunities to actually run to Bush's right and say they represent change, but conservative change. The fifth point I wanted to make is that both parties are more realist in orientation than they were 5 or 10 years ago. I think you could see that on the, if you asked foreign policymakers on both sides, do you think it was a good idea that we held those Palestinian elections that we allowed Hamas to run in? I think in both parties, people would probably say no. And in both parties, when talking about democracy in the Middle East, while people would still say that they believe that it's an important long-term goal, I think they would stress the fact that building liberal institutions takes a very, very long time, that rushing too fast to elections can, in fact, set back the cause of liberalism. And I think that's something you're seeing across the board. Just listen. It's very important in a campaign not only to listen to what candidates say, but to what they don't say. And you don't hear a lot of rhetoric from either side kind of the Bush 2004, January 2005 second inaugural variety. Democrats are more likely to stress the nexus between development and democracy. I think this is a particularly important emphasis that Barack Obama has focused on, and it very much fits with the kind of liberal foreign policy tradition, going back to the Marshall Plan and Point 4 under Harry Truman, the Alliance for Progress. Democrats are more likely to believe that and Blair has talks about this as well, that you're not going to have enduring liberal democracy without greater degrees of economic development. That's something you hear Republicans talking about a little bit less, I think partly because they're genuinely more skeptical about whether foreign aid can be successful. Sixth, a Democrat who gets elected will obviously face an enormous conundrum about what to do about Iraq. They will face choices that in political terms are extremely costly no matter what they do. Essentially, the question is, do you want Bill Kristol to be saying that you stabbed America in the back by withdrawing American troops and clutched and grabbed defeat from the jaws of victory? Or do you want the Democratic Party base, particularly on the internet, to say that you betrayed your promises to them and your pledge to withdraw from Iraq? It's not going to be an easy political decision. But I think the critical way to think about it is this. How afraid are Democrats of attacks from their right versus how concerned are they about opposition within their own base? This is a very important dynamic, I would argue, in understanding the whole history of Democratic foreign policy. Democrats absolutely traumatized by the experience of the 1950s, the loss of China leading to McCarthyism, determined in the 1960s not to lose Vietnam because they didn't want to repeat that experience. I think there is a generational difference here that is very important. Older Democrats, baby boomers and older, who came of age in the 1970s and 80s and even into the 90s, I think came to believe that this was a pretty conservative country. They saw Republican landslides like the 1972 and 1984. They came to believe that you only could win an election as a Democrat if you were militantly concerned about protecting your right flank and never doing anything that made you be perceived as weak. Younger Democrats don't see it that way. If your experiences have really start with the 1990s, you have never seen a big Republican blowout. You've seen a lot of Republican power in Washington, but the Republican victories have been very small from the perspective of the Democratic base, maybe not even entirely legitimate. And Democrats have lost when they have not stood on principle. Again, this is the narrative that's very powerful for the Democratic base. The election of 2002, when they wouldn't talk about Iraq. The election of 2004, where they didn't seem to have a clear position on Iraq. 2006, when they were more strongly against the war, they won big. Democrats believe today, younger Democrats, much more like the younger Democrats who believe that Lyndon Johnson was too concerned about his right flank in 1964 and 1965, that older Democrats are too concerned about their right flank, that this is a country where liberals and Democrats have a lot more room to run, both on domestic issues like universal health care and foreign policy issues like Iraq and Iran, than older Democrats think they do. And that the challenge for the Democrats is not, as Rui Teixeira has dubbed it, the politics of inoculation, of protecting yourself, but it is the politics of definition. That the Democratic Party's fundamental problem is not that they are considered too far to the left, but that they don't have a fundamental identity at all. And that filling in that identity, even if it involves taking certain positions that are going to get you flack from the right, are worth doing. I think that is the ascendant view in the Democratic Party, and that's why I think you certainly see it in the Obama campaign, a little bit less so in the Hillary Clinton campaign, but it's why I would bet that Democrats will withdraw troops from Iraq, they will decide the politics suggest withdrawing troops from Iraq relatively quickly. Of course, we don't know what the policy realities are going to be, but I think just talking about the politics of it. The last two points I want to make, first about Iran. Trying to think about how to understand the Iran debate in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party. I think that they are two different debates. I think in the Republican Party, the debate is really about whether you believe diplomacy can ever work, or whether you believe that we're just basically biding our time until we need to use military action. Do you have any faith in diplomacy at all? I think the Democrats, the debate is a bit different. Democrats have not taken force off the table. But I suspect that the debate amongst Democrats is really more about how you try to get to a deal, which is to say coercive diplomacy versus some series of goodwill gestures. What I'm trying to say is, do you believe that the best way to ultimately get a deal with Iran is to keep bashing them over the head with tougher and tougher sanctions until they finally say no mas and then come to the bargaining table? Or do you believe that, as may be true with the U.S. opening to China, that it actually took a series of U.S. goodwill gestures, which would no doubt be called appeasement by Republicans, in fact, to try to create a climate in which you could have fruitful negotiations. I think that will be the really, in some ways, at least for the time being, the really critical debate inside Democratic circles about how to approach Iran. And the last point, just because Michael brought it up, about the Jewish vote. I don't think there is a Jewish vote in the United States anymore. I mean that in a very particular way. Denomination used to matter a lot in American politics. Catholics used to vote. There used to be a strong leaning for Catholics, period. And Southern Baptists used to lean Democratic. Catholics leaned Democratic. Mainline Protestants leaned Protestant. What we started to see in recent decades... Leaned Republican. They were Protestant. They leaned Protestant as well, but they leaned Republican. I think that what we started to see in recent decades is that denomination matters less and extent of religiosity matters more, which is to say Catholics who go to Mass a lot vote like Protestants who go to church a lot. Catholics who don't go to Mass vote like Protestants who don't go to Mass. Don't go to church. The type of religion you are matters less than the fervency of your religion. That's been true for Christians now for a while. It's starting to become true of American Jews, which is to say the secular religious divide, which divides both Catholics and Protestants, with Democrats winning both more secular Catholics and Protestants and Republicans leaning more churched Catholics and Protestants, is starting to affect the Jewish community. George W. Bush was creamed amongst American Jews in 2004, but he won, by one estimate, 69% of the Orthodox vote. So amongst the most religious segment of the Jewish population, the Republican Party is making real inroads because that community has very different perspectives on some domestic and foreign policy issues. That's the good news for the Republicans. The bad news is that Orthodox Jews are only about 10% of the American Jewish electorate. So when my Republican friends say that Jews are moving their way, I say, just wait 75 years. Since Orthodox Jews are 10% of the American Jewish population, but 5% of the American Jewish population under the age of 5. 20% of the American Jewish population under the age of 5, because they have less intermarriage and a higher birth rate. So over the long term, the prospects for Republicans amongst Jews may be good, but as one said, in the long term, we're all dead. Thanks very much.